Hello everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. That's the name of the show I'm getting to like less and less each time I say it. My guest today on the program is Simon Mitchell of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. But before we get to Simon, I just want to say a few things. Rate, review and subscribe to the show if you enjoy what you hear. Get in touch with me over Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. NBL Pocket Podcast was taken, I can't remember. Or Gmail, nblpocketpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook, NBL Pocket Podcast, and YouTube, most importantly at this point, NBL Pocket Podcast. I put out a Game 5 of the NBL 2K20 Grand Final Series between Sydney and Perth. It was a video I made using the rosters, the NBL rosters in NBA 2K, so that's a fun video, I suppose, if you're into it. Also, keep an eye on that channel and on Twitter, and Facebook, really, because I'll be pushing out a few little videos I'm making using that NBL, NBA 2K content. And lastly, you can get in touch with me over the phone, 0499-396-818. I've got a burner mobile phone, and if you want to ring and have the chats about what your team was in NBL 20, what it is going to be in NBL 21, whatever you want to talk about, happy to do it. Going back to Simon Mitchell, I got in touch with Simon via email asking for the chats. He responded almost urgently in the affirmative. Simon is a salesman. Salesman sounds a little sleazy, so maybe he's an ambassador of the NBL and his team. He believes in being approachable and hands-on. He's honest and affable, two of my favorite qualities in a person. This was a fun team. This Southeast Melbourne Phoenix team was a fun team through NBL 20, and Simon's a fun guy. They're very much a reflection of their coach, and you'll see we talk about a number of things, but why they had the skid that they did or the season that they did, it comes through. I really enjoyed chatting with Simon, and he was super generous with his time. We spoke about, amongst other things, his press conference style, the sneakers with the suit, why he carries a little towel, NBL heroes and villains, what Simon considers the most important facets of coaching in the NBL specifically, how Southeast Melbourne use analytics. Is it predominantly in lineup data? Is it in recruiting? So on and so forth. Guarding Bryce Cotton, entertainment value in sports, how Simon's and Southeast Melbourne's on-court persona helps them off the court with ticket sales and things. We talk about why the team lost its last 8 games in a row. We talked about Benson. We talked about imports. We talked about Creek, Ty Wesley, finding that balance with Ty Wesley. We spoke about Tarico White and Kendall Stevens, a bunch of things. I can't recall in what scene we spoke about Tarico White because that talks haven't engaged there because NBL free agency hasn't started, but I think we spoke about that as an idea and a concept of team building for next year. I really hope you enjoy this chat with Simon Mitchell, and here he is. Your press conference style, Simon, let's start there. Pretty candid. Do you have an objective when you go into those, or are you just, you say what you wish? Because my favorite is the line where you go, this really cracked me up. I forget it was maybe the loss against Melbourne where you go, people bitching about effing salary caps, fouls, just take it on the chin. My favorite quote from a press conference. When you go into those, what's your sort of mindset and style?
Oh, I don't really have a mindset. I'm certainly not conscious of a certain press conference style. I do believe as coaches, we've got responsibilities to assist journalists. You know, not everybody has a strong background in the sport, so I feel like as coaches we've got to try and impart a little knowledge to them.
Right.
But also I feel that we've constantly got to be selling our sport, so we owe the sport more than just punching out a couple of cliches, I guess. We need to give some real insight and maybe drop a little humour in there as well. You know, it's not the most fun part for us as coaches, but it's part of the job, so
right.
You've got to try and service every aspect of the job to the best of your ability.
You're pretty comfortable on camera. Is that something you sort of you're by nature, or have you by nurture? Have you sort of developed that over time?
No, I'm not comfortable. I don't feel comfortable on camera. You know, like obviously during the course of the game, I'm not conscious of it. Leading into the games, I don't have a lot of experience with it. But you know, I guess the thing is that we work with some pretty good people. I know that the people at Southeast Melbourne in our media department are great. They're fun to work with. When we're doing our little spots for our website, Candy Hertz, she's a star. You know, she's a lot of fun, and you know, we're always having a bit of a laugh and a goof around off camera. So it's just very comfortable working with her, and she's probably the person I've done most of the work with during the course of the year. And obviously the written media after the game, I mean, it's the same crew most weeks. So you build a little bit of a rapport with them. You know, some of the guys there I've known for you know, many, many years as well, just been through the basketball rope. So yeah, it's not an area that I feel a lot of comfort in, but it's actually somewhere where I think I need to get better at, and you know, I'll look to improve upon.
Right. One thing I had is, do you keep this in mind as a pro sports team, taking players who perhaps haven't played on camera to then being on camera? I mean, most of these guys are filmed pretty early if they go to a US college, but there's some who go literally from obscurity to, you know, sometimes primetime TV. Are you mindful of that? Is that ever a conversation you've had with a player?
No, I don't think playing in front of cameras is an issue for the players. I mean, there's certainly an element of nerves that you carry playing in front of a crowd, playing in different environments.
Right.
You know, it's different playing in Melbourne as it is to playing in Perth, or different in Perth as it is to playing in Sydney. You know, and so I think there's an element of familiarity that the guys attain over time. But that's why, you know, rookies often come into the league and they struggle a little bit because they don't have that that level of comfort at that point in their careers. So it's just something about, certainly we talk about different environments, but not the cameras, not so much.
Not so much cameras. Sneakers, let's go to a different thing. Sneakers with a suit. Was that your idea? Where did you get that? Were you doing that all year, or did that something you came into later in the season?
No, I'm probably the most unfashionable bloke walking the face of the earth. You know, if I'm outside of a Motorhead t-shirt and a pair of shorts, I feel uncomfortable wearing anything. So the whole shoes thing, that was actually a physical issue. I kneel a lot when I coach, especially at training.
Yes, I had
So I think I inherited that from Brett Brown. I kneel a lot, and I started to get a little bit of an issue with the nerve in my right foot during the course of the year. And so the move to the sneakers was really just because the leather shoes weren't cutting it for me. I was actually getting a lot of pain in my feet during the course of game. So I just wore the shoes for a handful of weeks until I got my foot feeling a little bit better, and then, resorted back to wearing the shoes. It was, it wasn't an attempt to be fashionable or anything like that. Although I do admire Don Nelson back in the day with the Milwaukee Bucks wearing, I mean, he looked like a drunk coming off getting off a park bench at times, but he had the suit that had all the wrinkles in it and the white pair of sneakers. So, I might adopt that. It looks comfortable.
Here's an idea for next season if you're on your knees a lot. Knee pads. Shorts with knee pads. What about shorts? No coach has done that before. Is that too much? Shorts with a nice polo? That could look kind of crisp.
No, I might keep that next generation of coaches. I think they can go with that one.
Liam Santamaria pointed this out on overtime one time. You carry a little rag sometimes. You play with it through your hands. Is that a stress ball relief type thing? Or why is that?
Oh, Liam. No, it's... Look, this is probably even more boring than the shoe story. I think it might have been round one against Melbourne. Actually, I got the microphone transistor in my left pocket. I got my markers in my right pocket, and I think I had my little whiteboard rag, which is what it is, in my pocket. And I pulled the whiteboard the rag out. And the Texas went flying, so I just ended up holding the rag just to stop that from happening.
Right.
There's really no story to that. It's certainly not stress-related or anything. I'm not trying to present the next Jerry Tarkanian or anything, chewing on towels. It just became easier to hold it than misplace it during the course of the game.
Necessity is the mother of invention. That makes sense.
There you go.
Let's shift to sort of the NBA on that. So everyone says that the NBL is a really highly scouted league. 9 teams, certain amount of players. Dan Brown, the author, says, when you start writing a novel, start with your villain because that will define your hero. So my question to you, Simon, is, with that in mind, which team in their play style was your biggest villain or obstacle, and what did you do to try and combat that?
That's a great quote. I think our most difficult opponent was Perth. There's plenty of reasons why they're the champs, and well-deserving champs too, I might add. They're the model franchise, and why everyone probably loathes them, or respects them, maybe, is probably a better word. But, Yeah, a bit of both. But it's all born of jealousy, really, because they're so damn successful and they've got what everybody else wants. So, I think it's probably Perth. I mean, you go over there, you got the Red Army. You know, they always place a couple of obnoxious drunks right next to the bench as well. He's screaming at you all game. And you never get favourable calls over there. And then on top of that, there's a hell of a basketball team, really well coached. So it always makes for a difficult trek. But we obviously went over there and got beat, got humbled by them early in the season, which wasn't a terrible surprise. We went over there feeling like, okay, let's see where we're at. And we were told exactly where we're at by the champs. That was that. But I guess it's your story, you know, leads to your question, you know, the villain. I mean, they're our villain. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way to beat them. And, you know, we tried a few things the next time we played them. We threw a couple of funky zones at them, which had a little bit of success in certain aspects of the game. You know, we were able to limit Bryce and Tirico and Clint Steindl to a degree in that first half. We played against them, but I remember in our zone, we just couldn't rebound out of it. Nick Kay kept getting A boards and putbacks, and then later on in the game, the other three got cooking, so we went back to a man, and then they come out, hit three threes in a row, and that's the ball game. So we've got to find a way to deal with Perth better. I feel like we're competitive against every other team consistently. Sydney, we went 0-4 against, but we're in a position to win on pretty much all of those games. Mm-hmm. So we feel like we've got a pretty solid game plan against Sydney, but their length and athleticism probably has given us a little bit of trouble as well. So we need to find a way to get longer and more athletic.
Let's say you're the coach of a fictional team. Let's say the Perth Bandits. That's the standard of fictional teams these days. If you were scouting the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, scouting yourself, what would you say to beating yourself? Now, it could be kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Pumping Iron, where he goes, you know, I give bad advices. You don't want to give away your secret recipe. But if you're scouting yourself, what would be your answer to the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix?
From an offensive, like, if you're mm-hmm. scouting against us, I think one of the keys for us is, one of the weaknesses for us offensively was an inability to get to the free throw line. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing us last season, I would have made sure that we didn't give any unnecessary fouls or get into the made a real point of emphasis to not get into the penalty. So we don't get free trips to the line. We didn't get rewarded a lot when we did take it to the rim. So yeah, it's one of those things where you've got to for us, when we get to the line, we were pretty potent. When we didn't, we were playing with an arm behind our back a little bit. So from that standpoint, I would really emphasise that. We didn't see a lot of zone this year, but I didn't think we performed particularly well. I know we were pretty inefficient against Adelaide early in the year. And that was a home game. They played a little bit of their switching D and a little bit of zone in there as well. I thought we were really inefficient that game. But we didn't see a lot of it after that. I mean, Adelaide still performed that. But once we got Ty Wesley back in the lineup, you don't want to zone us because we've got shooters and a great playmaker from the high post. So, if Ty wasn't playing, I'd probably throw a bit of that at us.
Okay. Jumping into that a little bit, those Adelaide games, obviously Creek had come from the 36ers. Was there ever a conversation between you and he before those games, like, all right, big game here, just wanted to check in with you. Do you do that sort of thing, or is it just business as usual?
Yeah, we had a little conversation about it, but it wasn't trying to make it bigger than it is. It's just a game.
Right.
He obviously would have felt that within himself. Just acknowledge it and then move on. You know, at the end of the day, it's you've got to put the strategies that you have in place, and you've got to make sure that you're mentally focused on the job at hand and not get distracted by, having mates in the crowd or, people yelling at you, those sorts of things. So,
mates maybe not so friendly. Let's jump to analytics.
I think he's got a lot of love over there. I think he's still got a lot of big fans over there. So, I think they were pretty supportive of him. Maybe not the rest of us.
Let's jump to analytics. The NBA and indeed the NBL seem to be, and some teams in the NBL seem quite heavily dependent or skewed towards analytics, or certainly taking them into consideration. Where do analytics come into your thinking or preparation as a coach with South East Melbourne this last season gone?
I think you find all the teams fairly into their analytics. The statistical data is presented each week. We're very much so. In the off-season particularly, I mean, we've got numbers on virtually everything, and we study them and we become familiar with them, and, you know, that's a pathway for us to be, you know, rebuilding our year two team. They're really a big part of our day-to-day running of a ball club. I think they give you a framework to build around, but at the end of the day, the numbers provide you, they've got to pass the eye test as well. Yeah. So, I feel like you can't be ruled by the numbers, but they certainly play a big part in the framing of how you strategically, you put your strategy together.
And when you say framing, like as far as recruiting players, like have you got analytics on guys you're looking at signing, or even like rotational data where you're like, okay, that lineup of Creek, Wesley, Stevens, whoever else, that got a certain amount of plus minus. Do you use it in that context, or more for like, oh, that player can score off pick and rolls at 65% or a bit of both?
A little bit of both. I think you've got to have your gut feel, and what has worked in the past is not necessarily guaranteed to work in the future. So you've got to be able to overcome obstacles throughout the course of the game. But as I said, I think they provide you with a framework, and then you've got to operate on your gut after that.
Makes sense. Coaching in general, would I be accurate in saying that the pillars of coaching in the NBL, these are the ones I think if you're a good coach, you're nailing these three? The number one being motivation, getting buy-in from key players, development from young rotational players. The second would be managing rotations, in particular lineups, like how you manage a lineup and how you get to that final five on the court in the last 3 minutes. And then third would be those subtle adjustments, especially in a final series going game to game, or maybe even sort of quarter by quarter. Would those three be the same pillars you'd put up, or have you got another one you like, or have I forgotten one?
Oh, I think when you're talking in-game coaching, those three are certainly high priorities. I think managing your rotations and the the subtle adjustments, and you saw that throughout the series just gone, that's incredibly important. The motivation and the mindset and making sure that the players are in an environment where they feel really good is really key. So I think that really reflects heavily on your game day coaching. You certainly have to know all three of those pillars, as you call them. I honestly feel the majority of the coaching's done during the week in the preparation and the implementation of strategy and getting the minds focused and getting the players in the best physical condition you possibly can. But the upkeep and the emphasis of your culture and your values, they're constant, and I feel like that probably supersedes everything. Talent helps, but I think those things which you're constantly upkeeping during the course of a week, reminding players what the values are, what you believe in, I think that's where a lot of your coaching comes from.
How do you build confidence? This is something off script. Like, how do you, let's say you've got a young player who's down on confidence, or even a star player who's just taking a hit or coming back from injury like a Ty Wesley. Is it a simple thing of chatting, or do you break down his game? Yeah, what do you do? Build confidence.
Yeah, no, I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. If you get everyone confident, feeling their best at all times, and in this case, it'd be really easy. But the players are emotional. They have a lot of things going on in their lives which aren't basketball related, and that all adds to the big basketball picture that comes out on game day. So I think a lot of it is making sure that you can try and get them into the best place. In their livelihood and the way that they operate their daily life. Also, as well as, obviously repetition of what it is, reminding these players, look, we've got you playing these minutes for a reason. We put you in these positions for a reason, and those reasons are that we believe in you and you doing the job well. I think if you can get the head right, the rest will follow.
Right. I want to talk about substitution patterns. You know, you look at the finals just been. Will Weaver made, well, maybe not quite a lot or a few, but, he certainly made more than Trevor Gleeson. Your substitution patterns, I haven't noted them down, but are you more mindful of lineups or fatigue, or do you have a structure to it? How do you work your substitutions? Because they're quite important.
Yeah, I'm going to borrow a line here. Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Right.
You know, substitutions are kind of that to me. You know, the rotations, like you can go in there with a plan and this is the lineup that we like against this lineup, or this is the matchup we like against that matchup in individual players, which is great. You go in that with those for most games, but then you get that punch in the mouth, whether it's a player rolling an ankle, picking up a little early foul trouble,
sure.
or can't make a shot, or has no matchup, can't defend at the other end. So my feelings on subs are, you know, you want your best lineups on the floor as much as possible, physically and emotionally at their best. So that requires rest. But there's also a situation, I'll use an example, we play Sydney, Kyle Adam has been outstanding against Sydney this year because, you know, they allow you to get looks in the mid pick and roll and, where he thrives. And they play a smaller backcourt at times. You know, they'll go out there with 2 point guards. They'll play Casper and Sean Bruce together. So we can go out there and say, all right, we can go with John and Kyle. You know, we're not going to get smashed at the other end because we've got a small lineup out there in the backcourt. So, but then we might play New Zealand next game and you've got Hobson and Sec Henry, and then all of a sudden there's a little bit of size and, you know, Kyle might not play as much. So even if he's going out and busted it up against Sydney, he might not get the minutes the next game because the matchups aren't quite there. So we go in there with strategy and we make sure we talk to the players and they know why they're playing or why they're not playing and why they might not see as much of the ball against certain teams because of, you know, the strategy involved. So as long as you keep those lines of communication open, the players are mostly receptive. They all want to play, they all want the ball in their hands, but, you know, as long as they understand why it's not happening, I think you'll still get the best out of them.
Right, okay. Let's jump on to, like, before you took the gig, putting NBL 20 to one side, almost pre-taking the job. So, South East Melbourne, you guys play a really exciting style. You score a lot, play a lot, it's free-flowing basketball. You can see guys making their own decisions on the floor. You know, and despite the record, which was, you know, out of the finals, you know, you had some pretty bright moments. The first throwdown was a really good game. The close finish in Adelaide, Creek couldn't quite get the putback. The comeback versus Cairns was amazing. You know, so you had a lot of... And the overtime game versus Sydney late in the year. So you had some really good ones. So let's go to this. When you applied for the job with South East Melbourne Phoenix, was part of your pitch for the role about playing a style that was entertaining and aesthetically pleasing, something that was going to get fans interested, or is it a nitty-gritty basketball thing?
Yeah, good question. I think the two can actually coexist.
Right.
You know, I think we've seen Showtime Lakers were awfully good to watch, and the Celtics of the 80s were great to watch, and, you know, there's been all these great teams that have been fun to watch. You know, Detroit Pistons, maybe not so much, but it's sort of like, you know, like I've gained a lot of pleasure out of watching entertaining basketball. We saw Adelaide make the grand final a couple of seasons back, playing, you know, a really aggressive, high-octane offensive style of basketball. So I feel like you can provide both entertainment and I think it's imperative that we do. I just feel like if we go back to the dark days of the NBL, which isn't that long ago, you know, the pre-Larry era, you know, some of those playoff games were borderline unwatchable.
Agreed.
And I feel like the way that the game's adjudicated now is that it almost forces you to play an entertaining style of basketball. You know, it's very, very difficult to put up really strong defensive performances. And if you go through our league and you compare our efficiency numbers and the defensive numbers throughout the world, we appear on the surface don't defend very well as a league, but we know that's not true. It's just the way that our game is structured and the way it's officiated and the entertainment value that is prevalent. We also have some damn good offensive players in the league. So back to your question, was it a part of the job,
your pitch?
Interview process. To an extent. I've been located in the southeast of Melbourne for a very long time. I've worked at many of the clubs out in this side of town. And these people know their basketball. And I think one of the things, it's not so much about the entertaining side of the game, it's more about they're not going to take bullshit from players or clubs or teams. You know, they're going to, if you're not out there giving it 100%, they're going to call you out. These people know their sport. It is the heartland of the basketball. We love to use that word, but you know, it's not just a marketing slogan. It's actually the truth. This is where 25% of the nation's basketballers reside, in the southeast of Melbourne. So if they don't see a team that plays hard, they're not going to come, regardless of whether or not you're putting the ball through your legs 100 times and throwing alley-oop passes. Like, it's not that, that's probably secondary to the fact that they need to be, for them to buy in to us. One, they're going to trust us, that we're going to be around because they've had a few heartaches through the years. But secondly, I think they need to see that there's an authentic and committed basketball team out on the floor.
Sure. Let's change direction. I want to talk about sort of more the nitty-gritty of NBL 20 and the Phoenix within it. Bit of a cheeky question, but is Ty Wesley, contrary to the to your style of play, I mean, you've seen where Tommy Greer's come out and said, you know, you guys are looking for length and athleticism. They wouldn't be the first two words I'd use to describe Wesley. Where does he fit into this team, you know?
Yeah, well, I think length of athleticism is something that we've lacked considerably through, I mean, I thought it was our biggest letdown throughout the course of the year. And that's something that you have to build over time. You know, the long players cost more money. I remember there was specifically there was a game up in Sydney, and I'm looking down the bench and I'm like, who have we got to throw in here? I needed some minutes for Creaky to get him off the floor and get him a break. And I'm looking down there, I'm like, Gibbo, get in there. And then I look up the other end, and Xavier Cooks is coming in to play at the same position. I'm just thinking, shit, this is a pretty difficult gig without length and athleticism. But, so that's why it's going to be the focus for us in the off-season. Sure. So in regards to Ty Wesley, you know, Ty, I think when you're putting a team together, you need to tick a lot of boxes. One of the things, we get it up and down. We're pretty good in the half-court offense. But at the end of the day, when it starts to get to the grind, you've got to be able to throw it in the block every now and then and expect a good look. And, you know, regardless of Ty's lacking in vertical leap and, you know, he's not 6'9", he still gets the job done down there as well as anybody. So, you know, he had his difficulties this year, but he'll be right and ready to go next season.
What about Creek at like a small ball four? Did you like the look of that, or do you prefer Wesley? What do you think of the, that sort of
thing? We didn't have a lot of choice in it after the first 5 minutes of game one when Ty went down. I think it's really important to remember for us as well. You know, Creaky didn't join us until the week of round one, and Ty Wesley was unstoppable in the preseason. We racked up a really good winning streak in the preseason, wins over Sydney, New Zealand, had Cairns in there as well. We split with Cairns, but Ty was playing unbelievable level of basketball. And then even that first game, in the first 5 minutes
fire.
He played, he had 4 of 4, 8 points. You know, he was playing the best basketball of his life. And then all of a sudden that stopped, and then we just had to throw Creaky into that role. So I think as much as Creaky was fantastic in it, there was a little bit of the role as well, which is a very creative role for the four-man spot. And, so both of those guys fit into that perfectly. But, yeah, you're right. Creaky's best basketball was probably at the four spot. But there's different reasons for that as well. Creaky's health took a bit of a turn after Christmas. His body's sort of started to deteriorate a little bit. And so that was one of the reasons, you know, when Ty came back, he started incurring injuries. And then it's sort of like this one big, there's a lot of reasons and a lot of conclusions you can draw. But to be honest, the two of them haven't spent a lot of time together on the floor healthy. So we need to do that in the off season.
Okay. Let's shift focus to Kendall Stevens. This is a stat I've been harping on about on Twitter for a lot. He didn't shoot a foul shot all season in 339 minutes. I thought that was incredible. He's one of the few 3-and-D type guys in the NBL. Like, when you talk about length and athleticism, he's really the first guy you point to on your team, other than maybe Creek a little bit. But, I mean, Kendall's long and lean and can move. What do you need to get him to go to the next level?
Look, 3-and-D is an interesting one. We've certainly got the three side of it down. We're putting a lot of time into Kendall. You know, he actually came in, he incurred an ankle injury fairly early in the season, which hampered his performances as well. And he went and had surgery as soon as the season was over, had some bone spurs removed. And, yeah, so there was a little bit of management of Kendall in the second half of the season. But we've got to get him, he's got to get some work done on his lateral movement, his defensive positioning, and that's really going to be a key focus. From the offensive standpoint, I mean, the guy shoots the ball as well as anybody. But he does have to find that balance. He has to find a little bit more, a few more tricks, and he needs to get to the goddamn line.
Were you shocked to see? Was that something? Were you aware of that in the season, or have I just told you that stat and you've gone, "Oh, really? None?" Or you knew?
No,
we
were aware of it. But yeah, I mean,
it's a lot of minutes.
It's rather inglorious, to be honest. It's not a great. It's not a great stat, but. He needs to be better and find a greater balance at the offensive end. I kind of compare him a little bit to Clint Steindl.
Sure.
You look at Clint a couple of years ago when he first arrived. He was fantastic in Townsville, and he had his sojourn over to Europe, and then he's come back, and he kind of had to bide his time in Perth just because of the values that they have. Clint has always been a great shooter and a scorer. But maybe wasn't the defender that they needed at that spot, and he's had to work away. And I feel like Kendall's going to have a similar sort of career. We've just got to chip away and get him stronger and get him a little more mobile, because he's certainly got the length, and he's shown at times that he can really dig in at the defensive end. But we've just got to find a consistency there that I can feel confident, and his teammates can feel confident that he's going to get a job done.
Jay Crockett, the team won with Jay Crockett. Was it a difficult conversation? Like, he was an injury replacement. He could have been an import. Like, I don't quite know how all those rules work. But what was your internal monologue around him? Because he seemed to sort of fit well, and it was a sort of sad sort of departure. How did you see that?
Well, we loved him. Jay was an absolute ripper. We got onto him pretty quick after Ty went down, and. He was fantastic for us, played his role as well as he could have hoped. It's a pretty simple rule, though. I know it may have been changed up in Sydney, but for us it was very simple. You come in as an injury replacement player. Once that guy's healthy, that player can no longer be part of your team. So, he wasn't part of our... I can't even remember the name of the four players you can nominate prior to the season, and they can come in as injury replacements, and then go back to that. But we didn't have the luxury of being able to bring an import in on that list.
Could when you made the decision off Benson, could you have brought Crockett back, or at that time had he signed elsewhere?
No, he'd signed elsewhere by that point.
Yeah, there was a quick gap there.
Yeah, he signed in Russia. He's playing in the BTB up until last week with Astana. So, yeah, no, he's a ripper, great guy. I'm not sure even when Keith moved on, he would have really fit out what we needed. Jay's pretty much a four-man, and we had Ty and Creek at that point in time. So I'm not sure if the fit was there. We could have gone some uber small ball, I guess, but probably not our greatest need.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. But you did like his play, because when on the floor, it just seemed to work. Like, it was interesting. I remember in a press conference, I think he even said it was difficult finding minutes for both he and Creek. When you're on the floor, like, even though it was a funky lineup, what did you see and what did you like?
Firstly, with Jay, his energy. He has an amazing energy. Super guy. His teammates loved him. Offensively, he's pretty reliable with that mid-range face-up jumper. And he gave us a level of athleticism that we didn't have. And we sorely missed that once he left us as well. But defensively, he works his butt off. If anything, he probably overhelps and overworks at times. Probably need to calm him down. He's worked so hard defensively, he can get himself out of position. But his positives just were amazing. And, he was the consummate professional while we had him.
Right. Let's talk about the slide. So you go on to finish 9-19. I think reel off a number of losses at the end there. We talked about Creep before. He said he was just sort of banged up. Was that a deterioration, or has he had surgery in the off-season or anything like that?
He did have surgery. Not surgery, but he had a knee injury at the end of the season, if you might remember.
I do. I remember that one, yeah.
So... He had a lot of niggles. He had his Achilles that was giving him an issue during the course of the year. It was just his loads. Gone off, going from Adelaide, going to Germany, then he went to Summer League, then he went and did the NBA G League, and then the NBA stints, and then straight into the Boomers, and then into us. As I said, we only got him the week of the season. His workloads have been, and it's just at the end of, by Christmas time, it just start to take its toll on him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just him, actually. We had a number of guys that were really struggling at the time. Dane Pinot was struggling with a back injury.
Really?
Okay. Kendall had his bone spurs in his ankle. Ty. Gibbo had missed a fair bit of time. Ty was still coming back from injury. There was actually about a month there where we really just... It was our training sessions.
You guys just looked to slow down. Like, you guys did, it just looked on the floor. Like, and then you had to plug in more minutes for other people that perhaps didn't see. I mean, Trist was starting to see big time when he hadn't seen it early in the year. So, yeah, it was pretty obvious to me that it was just sort of like a big load on these guys. But back to Crete, though. Do you feel like, let's say he hadn't done G League, hadn't done Boomers, had a whole clean off season, is 35 minutes a game achievable throughout the whole year? Or is the thing that wore him down that schedule?
That's north of where I'd like to play him.
Right.
I think he'd find a couple of years back, Sydney had four of their starting five playing over 31 minutes a game. So it is achievable, but I don't think it's ideal. I think if you want to make sure that, I think Creaky around that 30 or 31 minute area is where I probably had envisioned him, but not having Ty at 100%. When we did get Ty back, he couldn't stay out of foul trouble. He had 2 fouls in the first minute of just about every game. So that was the other thing that kind of pumped up Kriegy's minutes as well. There's a few things that added to it.
You feel, though, the schedule, because you can play big minutes in games. You're around that, say, 30, 31, 32. But it's the just constant. If you've got a 12 months of basketball, do you find that you need that, like a player needs that sort of a month off of just total rest, or can you manage that through the year? Is it case by case?
Yeah, I think everyone gets managed at all times, to be honest. Yeah. There's players that go around and I've used Dave Barlow as an example. He went away and played his NBL one season. Excuse me, at the end of last year, and he just kept it going. He used to have a little bit of time off, but he just kept it going and just kept the wheels rolling. It just makes it a little bit easier. I know David Anderson's one of those guys as well, where they just want to keep everything going. You keep in a rhythm, and if you stop, then you've got to start to rebuild that. So maybe when you get older, it is nice to get that rhythm, but when you get to that age with those guys, then you're constantly being managed through the course of a week anyways for the majority of the players. But, Krieg is someone that we had to manage a lot in the second half of the year. Towards the end of the year, he started to get his mojo back, started feeling better and having more confidence.
Yeah, looked good in that Sydney game when he got hurt. Looked good in that one, for sure.
It was unfortunate.
Simon, I'm going to make you relive something a bit painful, but here we go. This is your 7 closest losses. 1 point, 4 points, 2 points, 6 points, 5 points, 1 point, 3 points. They're your 7 closest losses. If you'd scored 29 points at the right times this season, you guys would have been in third place. 29 points. When you put it like that, it stings a little bit.
It stings a lot.
How would you rate your team's ability late in games? You've got a lot of close finishes that didn't quite happen for you. How would you rate it?
Yeah, I think we were poor. I thought outside of the length and athletic ability that we're building on in the off-season that we'll be sourcing with our recruiting, that's going to be a really key area of our game. And it's not just the end of the game. I feel like that the last minute of quarters that we executed poorly as well. Our clock management could be poor at times, but our shot selection was poor in those situations. So I feel like it's an area we worked on during the course of the year and a lot. But for whatever reason, the penny didn't drop for us. Adam Gibson's absence was really felt during that period. And I know when we were playing New Zealand at home, the back half of the season, which I'm sure is one of those losses that you just mentioned, we're in it up to our necks. And I went to turn and say, Gibbo, get in there, mate. But his calf had packed it in. So it was... okay, all right. Well, there goes our the bloke that we're going to rely on to make really good decisions. He just calms everyone down. He gets an extra ball handler out the floor. And then we went and it was kind of a similar tale. Our execution the last 2 minutes of that game. I think we were up one and then lost by three. So it's it was a bit of a tale for us throughout the course of the year. And it's something that we need to make sure that we get on top of.
Because Gibson had those games where he'd sort of score maybe 8 or 12 points, you know, 4 or 5, 3 threes, none of which outside the fourth quarter and stuff like that. Cheeky question for you, son. Is a fast-paced offensive style such as yours in South East Melbourne Phoenix contrary to winning close games or games in general, and if so, why not?
Good question. I think, and we talked about Ty Wesley earlier, you know, not quite fitting the role of the athletic, long, lengthy, rangy athlete, is that you've got to have your go-to guy that you can pound it into and shoot seconds off the clock. I mean, you've got to show a little bit of dexterity with the clocks running down and being able to manage it. And I think Ty would be that guy for us. I know in pre-season it certainly was. We're having similar issues. And then we just said, all right, we're running plays for Ty down the stretch. And we started to hold on to those leads and close out ball games. Losing Ty, I think, was a big part of that because we sort of lost our identity of who's our go-to guy down the stretch of a game. And because he's not just a good scorer down there, but he's also a great decision maker and passer, it's sort of, you lose a lot when we had that.
Right. What was I going to say? Because I don't think it's any surprise that you see Perth, strong defensive team in the grand final. Sydney, strong defensive team in the grand final. Is it a matter of finding the balance, or can you just push the red into one direction, be totally defensive, be totally offensive-minded? Were you surprised those two teams got there playing the defense they did?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Certainly Sydney's defense during the course of the year was exceptional from the statistics. The analytics all point to them being the best defensive team. But Perth seemed to score... had some scores during the course of the finals. I know we felt when we played Sydney that we could score comfortably. So matchups play a part of that. I still think Perth, when they really lock down, are the best defensive team in the league. But their numbers this year weren't anywhere near as strong as your traditional. I said to the players, this ain't your mother's Perth Wildcats. This is not the team that they go about it in a different way. But when they really lock in, I still feel like they're the best defensive team in the league.
Did you, this is off grid, but did you come up against them with Plumlee?
I think you did. I think we played. Yeah, we did. We played one game over there with Plumlee.
What did you think about him as a player? Because he just looks so big on television, and when I saw him, he just consumed so much space, and his athleticism. He's a guy. I did a little podcast last week about free agent targets. Talk about length, athleticism, and defense and things. What did you like about his game and playing against him?
He's an exceptional athlete.
Yeah, he's massive.
Despite the size, he moves very nimbly. He's very much a role player, though. I think he feels much more, despite the fact he's got really good touch on his jump hooks, and he can. He seems very content. He's been a role player for the majority of his career, going back to his days in college as well. So I think there's a really good niche player there. For us, I would love to be able to welcome a guy of that sort of caliber into our franchise, but there's a lot of things that go into bringing players into your franchise. One, there's got to be minutes available, money available, role available, and he's got to fit what you're trying to do. But I certainly see how he could help a lot of teams in the NBL.
Let's shift to another big. Keith Benson, had him on the team. You were 7-9 with him, and then the rest of the way, you must have gone 2-10. With an 0-8 at one point. Thoughts on that? Is that a coincidence or a silly stat, or is security and consistency in pro sports quite important? We saw last year where there was a lot of talk with the Wildcats about, should they bring in a third import? Maybe they'd have to cull a local to bring that in. And they said, no, we're going to go with consistency, and maybe it paid off. Maybe it was more to it. But in regards to Benson, how did you feel that worked?
Yeah, I don't feel like that was a key component of us losing a lot of those close games. Most likely Keith wouldn't be on the court down the stretch of those games. So But having said that, you know, like Keith had moments during the course of the season which were really great. But I just feel like that, you know, for the most part, it didn't fit what we were trying to do. Right. And, yeah, I think the 0 or the 2-10 back end of the season probably had a little bit more to do with, you know, our health at that time.
Right.
As well as, you know, dropping a lot of close games. You know, we needed to execute better down the stretch of games. So, yes, well, health can be a bit of an excuse. There's certainly issues within our team on the floor with regards to execution and closing out games. So that's, you know, we have to take full responsibility for that.
Right. Let's jump over. Let's look at Perth Wildcats, right? They've just come off champions again. We talked about it a little bit before, but, like, Bryce Cotton, and how do you beat this team? We talked about it before. Bryce Cotton specifically. We saw where Sydney sort of employed their drops again a little bit. He just seemed to score at will. Let's say you had been if you were in command of the Sydney Kings, what would you have tried against Bryce Cotton?
Yeah, look, it's got to be. I mean, he does thrive in that mid pick and roll. And you know, when you got players playing deep, I mean, it worked for them the majority of the season. They play the numbers game and say, well, for the majority of teams, this is not going to be a great shot. It's a great shot for Bryce Cotton. And he showed that through in the course of the playoffs that you know, he's very, very comfortable in that mid-pick and roll and that mid-range pull-up and a little bit of the float game and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, you know, I think Casper did extraordinary efforts to try and make it hard for Bryce to get the ball. And I think there was an element of success at times in that as well, particularly in game two. But ultimately, you need to gang up on him.
Like what Cams did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just continually throw bodies at him. I mean, he's an exceptional player. He's the Rubik's Cube that nobody's really been able to work out just yet. So, Cairns did a wonderful job, and maybe they've thrown the blueprint out there for everybody else.
Let's jump over. Dane Pinot. Dane Pinot seems to you guys, he's kind of like a little bit of, he's kind of like change that you found between the couch, you know. Was it Sydney? Was a, you know, role player deep off their bench, and all of a sudden comes in, he's starting for you and a huge rebounder, and he's kind of this found gold. You kind of have an interesting decision with him. You got a club option and a few things, and really with the question with Pinot is, what emphasis do you personally and does your team place on rebounding as an effective stat to winning basketball? So that's my question to you. What emphasis do you place on rebounding as far as winning basketball?
Okay. Specifically to Dane or to just the team?
Let's go Dane first.
Okay. Well, I went and visited with Dane when he was at St Mary's, and known his family for a long, long time. Played with his brother. Oh, sorry, his father at Melbourne and at Bulleen, have a good relationship with Brad. And I've always been a fan of Dane's game. I feel like as far as pick and roll defenders, he's amongst the best in the NBL. His jump shot needs a little work. It's a bit of a corkscrew. But he's got his foul shots were a little bit better this year. But look, he's a great kid. Plays super hard. It's a no-brainer for us. We're bringing him back. He's going to be part of our core group of players that we build into the future with. He is a very, very good offensive rebounder. I still think there's plenty of work for him to do at the defensive end on the boards.
Okay.
Because he's more of a mover rather than a, you know, sort of wrestler when it comes to rebounding. And so that really benefits him at the offensive end because guys go to box him out. He's moving and he's very, very difficult and he's got a great nose for the ball and where it's going. So he does a very good job of moving on the flight of the ball and knowing where the ball's going to go. Now, from a defensive standpoint, your job is to sort of get a box out and then wrestle and make sure that that guy doesn't get it and then go pursue the ball yourself. And I still feel there's areas there, in that area is a lot of work for him to do. I know he put up some great rebounding numbers, particularly in the second half of the season, but But yeah, I still feel like there's a lot of improvement at that end of the floor, and that's going to come as his body matures and he gets a bit thicker. But yeah, he's certainly got a nose for it.
Yeah.
As far as teams, I'm a huge fan of team rebounding. I grew up, and my idol as a young fellow was Moses Malone. Absolutely adored him. Just a rebounding fool, just chased down every loose ball. And then I graduated from Moses to Charles Barkley and Dennis Rodman. So I've always had an affinity for the rebounders. You go back through the history of it. I mean, each league is unique. And you saw, coaches this year, and I'll say New Zealand and Sydney, where you're bringing international coaches, and they're probably the two least formidable offensive rebounding teams. It's a cultural thing, I think, in Australia that we really value the offensive boards and the second possession. And you go through the history of our league in recent years, or at least the last 15 years, you see the Perth and those New Zealand teams and the Melbourne United team that won the championship. And these teams were all really good rebounding teams. Mm. So I feel like, especially at the offensive end, I know that those Perth and New Zealand teams are often number one and two ranked in the league. I think New Zealand won a championship where they might have been around sixth in the league in the offensive rebounding percentages. But, for the most part, those two are the one and two rebounding teams. So I feel like possessions is a really important part of our game, and extra possessions. And I feel like when you saw Sydney in the playoffs, they certainly turned their... They were phenomenal on the offensive boards, and Perth not so much.
Yeah.
Defensive rebounding is probably a little bit of an issue for Perth during the course of the year. I don't think they were at the levels that they've been previously. I think Sydney saw a little bit of an advantage there, and I think the addition of Xavier Cooks and just his activity on the O-boards for Sydney was awesome.
Yeah. There's a podcast out there. It's an American guy. His name's Ben Taylor. I don't know if you've heard this. He's got a podcast called Thinking Basketball. In it, he talks about how he finds it strange that rebounds are put alongside points, field goal percentage and assists as a measure of a player's performance. He's sort of more of the opinion that rebounding is a team stat. There's very little, very few rebounders. What does two rebounds equate to in the scheme of a win? 2 points can make a big difference. 2 rebounds, he argues, not so much. What are your thoughts on the importance of rebounding as far as like winning basketball? Do you feel it's a thing that you can sacrifice rebounding skill in your team if it means pushing, more offensive talent or defensive talent? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd probably politely disagree with Ben a little bit. I think I know what he's saying in regards to team rebounding. Like, you might get 2 rebounds, but if you're boxing out each and every single time, then and your team's getting all the boards and you're not getting crushed and giving up second chance points and all those sorts of things, then you're doing your job, and so the rebound itself is a team stat. So I tend to agree with that. We actually we stat box outs in our games.
Right.
We don't stat rebounds. Like, we don't really care how many rebounds
the player
gets.
Right.
But we hold the players accountable to their box outs, and we give, you have to get a 90% is a pass rate. So if you box out on 90% of shots that go up, then you get a pass. Now, obviously, there's certain aspects of the game where you don't have to box out. Your player shoots it and he starts backpedaling to the defensive end to get, to cover the defensive transition. There's no box out to be had there, so you get it. But we hold it really dearly. And we saw during the course of the year, we were struggling on the boards early in the season. And we implemented this, did the same thing at Melbourne United as an assistant there, and we had success with it as well. But we implemented it, and we started actually rebounding the ball really, really well. And then down the backstretch of the season, we struggled a little bit as our health was on the decline, and physically incapable of performing on the boards at the level that we required. But the box outs were still there. We just couldn't get the ball. I feel it's a really important aspect of the game. And I think Perth might feel that as well. That's why they've been so successful.
Right. Did you think the three-point shot, I mean, if a guy takes a three-point shot, which are obviously the attempts are on the rise across the league, all leagues pretty much everywhere, do you feel that the three-point shot, because it comes off the rim long, does it decrease the number of what I'd call like technical rebounds, like rebounds that require a box out, a bit of maneuver and get it? It seems like a lot of rebounds are going long these days. Have you seen that to your eye, or am I off my hinges?
No, I think that's correct. There's a little bit of a flippant statement, but I know that when we played at Perth early in the year and there was a lot of threes getting thrown up and that ball was, get behind the three-point line without bouncing on the misses.
Yeah.
And, there was, it's hard to rebound from a defensive standpoint when that ball's going long. So, yeah, certainly the three ball will increase the level or the numbers in the offensive boards. But at the same time, you've got to make sure that you position yourself to get those. If you're an offensive player, you're going to make sure you empty out through those elbows in the key way and get yourself in a position where those can go. And the great players who've got a nose for it, they're still going to go come up with it. The Mickers, the Dane Pinos, those guys, you just have a knack for getting those rebounds. They'll come up with it because they want it more.
Yeah, I think it shows that also rebounding at the guard spot is going to become more and more important. You're going to see more guys make a huge influence who are your rebounding guards with these long balls going up. But that's something for the future. Simon, that's all I've got for you. That's all I've got for you, but I really appreciate you taking the time. Really appreciate it. Had a lot of fun.
No worries. Appreciate it. Yeah.